Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Laufer, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another great episode of NucleCast. Of course, I am your host, Adam Lowther, and today we have a great guest. I'm talking about Major General Colin Connor, who is the Director of Intercontinental Ballistic Missile Modernization at Air Force Global Strike Command. Of course, you know that as the Sentinel ICBM, and Sentinel's been in the news a lot lately, and who better to have on NucleCast to talk about it than the man who is in charge of making sure that that system is delivered. General Connor, welcome to NucleCast. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. And I can think of a lot of other people. There's a lot of great people that make up the Sentinel team. There's a lot of people that have been for years working to field from what was originally GBSD or ground-based strategic deterrent that transitioned into Sentinel. But I appreciate the opportunity. So let's have a great discussion.
So, Sentinel and the ICBM has been the target of advocates of arms control and disarmament for at least a decade, throughout the entire, since we, the John Kyle and the U.S. Senate agreed with President Obama that we were going to modernize all three legs. It was at that point that the ICBM leg came under, significant attack. And then when we had the Nunn-McCurdy breach a year or so ago, that was, another opportunity that was seen as this is when we're finally going to get rid of it. Can you tell us where we are with Sentinel? Are we now on track? I mean, of course, we haven't built silos or ICBMs in, 50 plus years. So this isn't something we do every single day. So can you tell us where we are? How are things progressing? Are we on the right track now?
Sir, yes, we are on the right track. We have a great relationship going forward with both our acquisition counterparts on the Air Force side and with the industry, with our industry partners. I think the other key point to this is it's that everybody gravitates to the Sentinel system, but it's also keeping Minuteman III operationally relevant until we actually field Sentinel. So there's two steps to this. From an on-track perspective, Sentinel never stopped. While we have worked some of the processes required of the program because of challenges, the program itself never stopped. If you went out to Cheyenne, Wyoming today and went to Francis E. Warren Air Force Base, you would see the construction that's ongoing on the installation right now to field Sentinel. That construction didn't stop while we tried to sort this out. Certainly, we had to go back and get the program recertified or certified that it was of national need that we're going to continue the program. That didn't halt us. It just caused us to reevaluate what we're doing. For example, we've gone back and looked at every requirement that was driving the Sentinel system and revalidated every one of those through a very rigorous process of going back to source documents, many not controlled by the Air Force, some directed by our national leadership of what's required of the land-based leg. And so that process, we have worked through there. We're on the other side of that now, and we are actively and aggressively working with our acquisition counterparts, with General Rogers and his team out at Hill Air Force Base, and with Northrop Grumman, our industry partner out there, to move this program along.
So for those who may not be familiar with Sentinel, there's, the missile component, and then there's all the infrastructure. Can you maybe talk for a bit about, where we are on each? What are our challenges? Are we ahead anywhere? How are we dealing with the challenges or taking advantages of anything that's been unexpectedly good? Where are we on those issues?
Yeah, knowingly of how comments can go interesting, but are we ahead on anything? I'll go back to Minuteman III, as you well know, put in the ground in the 1970s, was planned for about 10-year lifespan, right? So to say we're ahead of anything, I'd say we're decades behind regardless, but yeah, many components. And that's really what drives the complexity of this acquisition in the fielding, right? And my General Rogers and his team do a great job on the acquisition and working with industry. My job is really working the transition of it in the fielding once he turns it over and says, hey, it's ready to go. But this is more than just replacing a missile. This is more than just new support equipment. This is a wholesale replenishment of the land-based leg. So every aspect that you think of, from where the operators sit, to the vehicles the maintainers drive, to the facilities that they do the work either on base or off base, every aspect of that is being redone. We're redesigning. We're making sure that they're integrated together. And so this is the challenges of doing it all at once. Is as you work through something and you get 6 months forward, let's say you're working on a building and you're 6 months and you're at a 65% design of that building, and then you go back and you do the integration piece and you say, are the vehicles going to fit in that building? You may have to reevaluate it. That's just part of the process. And that's part of the people say that becomes frustrating. I don't think it's frustrating. I think it's refreshing to see that we're integrated across the many disciplines involved in this process, from the missile side to a silo side to a launch center side to the support equipment to the training systems that all of our airmen will use. All of those have to be integrated together and work through. So are we progressing as we should? Back to your original question, I'd always like to go faster. Right. I'd like it to be done tomorrow. It's not. Let's be realistic about this. It's the most complex, arguably, the most complex system the United States Air Force has ever fielded because of the size and scope. And then you take, it's not just one system, right? I talked about F.E. Warren or Francis E. Warren Air Force Base earlier, and I talked about one building on there, right? There's a couple buildings under construction, but I'll talk about one. We're talking about 600, in essence, facilities being built for this system in the missile field and on the installation. So I get excited about one. I'm going to be excited 600 times over as we get through 600 buildings, 400 plus missiles that will go on the ground. It's large beyond belief.
Yeah. So, the complexity, the size, things have changed a lot since we last built, ICBM silos. I mean, the environmental regulations weren't there before, whereas they are now. So nothing is as easy as it once was. Are you finding that, let's talk about the missile itself. So the missile itself seems to be having no issues. It seems to be on time, on budget, and, it's going to offer capabilities that Minuteman III does not have. And given the, the capabilities of our adversaries, more capable missiles are certainly important. Can you maybe talk a little bit about, for those that say, well, listen, ICBMs are unnecessary anymore, and because we put them in holes in the ground, they're highly vulnerable, they're destabilizing, because we're going to have to launch on warning, and that's our only option, and therefore it's just so destabilizing, and therefore just get rid of them altogether. And that's the thing to do, because submarines will be invulnerable for eternity. Apparently we're never going to figure out how to actually target a submarine. So can you maybe talk about this sort of idea and notion And what are you thinking, and what is the Air Force thinking about, and the nation, you know, the leadership, in terms of why do we still want these? Why are we willing to go over budget as we have to make sure that we still have them, that they are more capable, that they're modern? Why are we doing that?
Yeah, it's a discussion I've heard many times over. I started in the mid-90s in the ICBM business. And it's something I've heard countless times. I mean, I've been told by senior leaders when I was a younger officer that land-based leg or ICBMs are a thing of the past, and it's a dying business. And I look at where we are now, and I couldn't be more excited to be part of something. Because, and again, I wear a uniform. I have a badge on here that says I do ICBM business. And so everything I say is going to be biased, but submarines are fantastic. Bombers are fantastic, but nothing provides, from my perspective, the more stabilizing aspect to this, and it's because they know where they are, and they can observe, they being potential adversaries. So when you have a size, and we could get into the math of what's the right number, nobody will ever know. The greatest thing I can say is, since we've put ICBMs in the ground, I pose the question back to you. What sovereign nation has attacked the continental United States since ICBMs went in the ground in the early 60s? The answer is nobody. No sovereign nation has attacked us, right? I should have let you answer the question. I apologize. But no other nuclear nation has attacked us. Nobody has attacked the continental United States since then. Now, is that because of ICBMs? Tell me, prove that it's not. You can't, right? It's one of those things where you can't say it's not. So, because of the uniqueness of each leg of the triad, that they form a great complement to each other. And so the values that each one bring, you know, you can get into, hey, I have to launch on morning, etc. No, you don't. That's the president's decision. That's purely a presidential decision. Having worked some jobs previously where we've gone through a lot of exercises, you'll see a lot of different people have different thought processes on that. But the readiness of them, having 400 intercontinental ballistic missiles available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that provides this nation a bedrock of national security that everything else builds upon. Any other freedom of action that we take on a military side is founded on knowing those ICBMs are available if the president needed to use them.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Ann Law Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
Yeah, so if we've talked about the missile a little bit, it seems to be a very good weapon. The long pole in the tent seems to be the infrastructure. Can you maybe walk us through the infrastructure? Where, you know, what are we going to do? What's that going to look like? Is it, you know, are we going to have silos that are, because we know the Russian and the Chinese have more accurate missiles, are those silos going to be harder than the existing Minuteman silos? What are we going to do in terms of infrastructure? What are we thinking about? How are we making sure that that new system is going to be the best possible system?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question with many aspects to it, and I'll start here. For those that are unknowing of some of the uniqueness of it, when this program was originally built or started, I shouldn't say built, when it was originally started, there were many aspects of it that we tried to use what was the existing infrastructure, right? Whether it's the existing silos or the existing communication system between the silos and the launch centers. Over time and through studies, we found that that's not the most cost-effective or operationally sound way of doing it. I mean, I'll give you this. If those silos that we're talking about for Minuteman III were put in the ground in the 1960s. If we use those through the lifespan of Sentinel, 2070, 2075 timeframe, they're 110 years old. Could they work? Potentially. But if we're going to do this right, now is the time to do it, right? There's modern construction technology has changed dramatically since the 1960s. So now is the time to look at that infrastructure perspective. And you're right. The missile is progressing fantastic. Progression is fantastic. The infrastructure is the challenge. But part of that challenge is, as I alluded to earlier, is the integration of many aspects together. If it was just to go dig a hole in the ground and put a missile in there, and we go back to, you know, previous ICBMs where one launch center controlled one missile, that's integration-wise, that becomes much more simplistic. It's using modern technology that we have, fiber, and other means of doing the command and control that make this integration extremely challenging. And because we haven't done this since the 1960s, that integration piece, working that piece together, we're just uncovering things, right? As we get to, as we work through a launch center design, we uncover things there on how we're going to do command and control that force us to reevaluate. And so we are making progress across the board, never as fast. The infrastructure piece, as I alluded to earlier, and that's just a one example, is, hey, I got a 65% of a design of a building. I discovered that the vehicle that's supposed to go in that building is larger or smaller than I thought, and I have to redo the building. It's the concurrent risk of redoing all of this at one time. But we're making progress. We're moving forward. We are post Nunn McCurdy, and you talked about that earlier. There have been noticeable efforts within this program of how we're moving forward and the great partnership that we have across the program. The other aspect of this, and when we think about the infrastructure and really the duplication, and I'm not a construction expert and I'm going to make it sound very simplistic, but once you get the first design for the first silo, then you're just copying it 450 times or 449 more times. Now, I got it. The soil is going to be different in different parts of the country, and you got to account for that aspect of it. But once the design is done, then you're moving. And then it's just an assembly line, very simplistic, you know, but that's, that moves much quicker at that point in time. It's this upfront work that we have to get right so that we're not redesigning each silo based on, hey, we discovered this and discovered that, and we get in a situation where the first 20 that we put in the ground look different than the rest of the 430. We're trying to build a system that is all integrated together.
Yeah.
It just takes time. Yeah. It just takes time.
Yeah, understandable. So if I could ask, what keeps you up at night? When you try to go to bed and you can't sleep and you're, it happens to me, although I think what keeps me up is probably different than what keeps you up. But what does keep you up at night when it comes to thinking about the work you do?
I'm not sure anything really keeps me up at night, because at the end of the day, I'm pretty damn tired, right? We have a phenomenal team here at Global Strike A10. I worry, am I taking care of the airmen that I have the opportunity to lead? And are we putting the system in the ground for the next 70 years that our airmen for 70 years will operate? That, if there's one thing, is, are we building the right system for 70 years from now? That'd be the one thing. And am I taking care of the airmen the best I can?
Pretty simple. So what would you say thus far in terms of, you know, what you guys have been able to accomplish? What is it that you would say, hey, this is what we're most proud of? This is sort of our biggest accomplishment.
Biggest accomplishment so far is the relationship that we have with the acquisition side and industry of moving this forward as quickly as we can. That relationship is paramount to making this work. That relationship has to last from now until the last silo is built. And I think in the last 2 years since I've been here on the job, that relationship has improved dramatically. We talk on a regular basis. We are in sync on things. You know, when I showed up here, there were a lot of government-only meetings or industry-only meetings. While there is a need for those to talk some aspects of this, those don't happen in the same frequency that they used to. That health of that relationship will make or break this program. I fundamentally believe that. There are some other nuanced things that we've done. 2 years ago, this organization that I'm part of didn't exist, right? It was part of another directorate here. So we have established a new organization, not only here at Barksdale, but we have detachments or commonly referred to as Site Activation Task Force, right? So we have one at Vandenberg. We have one at each missile base, so F.E. Warren, Maelstrom, Minot. And then just a couple weeks ago, our deputy commander here formally established the detachment out at Hill Air Force Base. So we have organizations, and we're continuing to build and fill out those organizations. That's another thing that a great accomplishment. And then the final one I'd say to you is we are actually documenting from an operator's perspective on how we're going to use this system. And we're working with our partners on the acquisition side and with industry on what that means. That wasn't done before. And I think that's critical to getting this program going in the right place so that we are communicating our needs from an operational perspective and then translating that so everybody understands. Because as many people, regardless of what business you're in, everybody comes up with their own language. And it's how do you translate that language? So when I say, for example, a nuanced thing, right? When I say launch silo, what does that mean? Or what does LC mean? What does a launch center mean? We got to translate that out to people who are building it of what we expect that. Because to me, that has connotations of what I kind of grew up in the Air Force doing in a launch control center on the Minuteman side. Not everybody has that same experience. And so the concept of operations that we've written and actually signed the first one, another great accomplishment. So yes, for one, the relationship is paramount to everything, but there's a lot of work that's been done to foster that relationship, and those documents are paramount to getting this program going in the right direction.
So as you move forward, you know, in the next 6 months or a year, what is it that you want to see accomplished? Let's say 6 months, 12 months from now, what if you're going to say, "Yep, I'm sort of hitting my gates." What is that? What do those look like?
Yeah, sir, that's a great question. The first one is again just the organization as a whole. What those SATAFs, and we've done a lot of looking back to, because we've only done this one time and it wasn't a great parallel, right? When the ICBMs were put in the 1960s, people often compare what we're doing to that. And those are apples and oranges because that was a clean slate when they went in the 1960s. So the establishment and the lessons learned from the 1960s are a starting point of discussion for the Site Activation Task Force. So within the next 6 months to a year, we need to understand and have systems in place for the Site Activation Task Force to understand how they're going to manage the infrastructure. Back to a question that you asked on why is the infrastructure so hard? Because it's a large construction project that we have to learn how to manage, right? Partnering with the Army Corps of Engineers to work through that piece. So I'm droning on about this, but organizational structure is very important to making sure we have the right organizational structure and forecast, because the SATAF will continue to grow as we work through the transition piece of this. Forecasting that we have the right number of people with the right skill set in those organizations. It's continuing to flush out over the next 6 months to a year. Really, by the end of this year, we hope to have another updated version of the concept of operations. What we learned by sharing the first one with the acquisition and industry is, hey, this is a good start, but you're not telling us how you want to operate the system. And so we're really working to field a concept of operations that explains that, that's in a language that we all understand, and then that we're educating out. That's the other piece of this, is the communication outward, that we're not operating within a vacuum here at Barksdale or at the detachments, but communicating to the force what we're doing, so that as people continue to flow in and out of this program, that we get the right people coming in that truly want to make a difference for the next 70 years. That's two big goals for the next 12 months.
And is there sufficient, you know, you were there for it when, you know, for missileers, you know, the saying was, if you're not in space, you're not in the race. And we went through our nadir. That happened at 2014. And then, you know, we've moved beyond that. Is there a new level of excitement across the missile field that, hey, we're actually going to get new systems. You know, we're going to have more capability. I want to be here to be a part of that, you know, fielding that new system, putting it in the ground. I mean, I've done 5 stand-ups, and there's been a historic level of excitement to be a part of something new. Are you seeing that? Is that what's going on across, you know, 20th Air Force?
Like you wouldn't believe, sir. And that goes back to that point I was making about communication outward, right? Once we have a better idea, it's communicating out to the force what we're doing. Yes, you see from our young people, and I say young people, from our young airmen, our CGOs, our NCOs and below on the enlisted side, a level of interest in this program that we've got to continue to capitalize on. And that's another part of my job and my responsibility, is I've got to continue to communicate. Our organization has to continue to communicate with those airmen so that we don't lose that enthusiasm. Those young airmen are also going to give us ideas. They're going to be innovative on how they do things. And so I have a handful of emails and phone calls that I've received over the last year or so of airmen that have expressed their interest. And they say, it's certainly they don't want to come work for me, but they want to be part of this mission set, right? Because everybody that's done any time in the ICBM business, tangentially, however you're connected to it, realizes this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. We're not doing this again in our lifespan. And so they want to be part of it. We've got to continue to keep that enthusiasm and excitement and show progress to maintain that. And then we've got to be open backwards and saying, hey, here's the progress we're making. And that's been a challenge for us, is here's the progress that we're making, and here's why you should want to be part of this. It is completely different than in 1996 when I showed up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and was just pulling alerts. It is a different mentality from our airmen, and it is healthy beyond belief.
Yeah, that's certainly good to hear. Now, it's that time in the show where I like to bring out Bob the Genie, and as I rub my magic lamp, Bob grants all guests 3 wishes about the topics we've been discussing. No, you can't wish for health or wealth or, you know, a sweet head of, you know, long blonde or brown hair. None of those. No youth or good knees. That would be my wish, would be good knees. But you got to make wishes about what we've been talking about. So with that in mind, General Connor, what is your first wish?
My first wish is that we continue to have a great relationship with our industry partners and with the acquisition community, and we just continue to make progress each day. That's the first wish, right? Just simple. Each day, make some progress. Move forward. And foster and that relationship being so critical to that.
Since you say that, let me ask, was there a challenging relationship between, let's say, you know, you as an operator and you know, the acquisition folks or industry, or was it miscommunication? Was it different visions, or is it just that it was okay, but now it's better?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I wasn't here I know what I, when I showed up, what I observed. And it was a relationship that was, it was a standard relationship that you would see, probably transactional. This is maybe a good way to describe it. What I see now is a team to build Sentinel. And I think that because this is such a long program and everybody's tied together on this, that team approach to this is truly what's going to make this last and make this work for the next, we're in 2025, so the next decade plus of fielding Sentinel. It cannot be transactional. We all have to be in agreement of where we're going with this. And I know I've talked about it a few times in this discussion. That's foundational to making this program work. It truly is. The trust in that relationship will make or break this program.
Yeah. Okay, so that's wish number one.
All right.
Wish number two.
That we get it right. Back to what keeps me awake, right? Nobody has all the answers. It's a great team approach. And that we get this right for Airmen in 2060, that they're saying, like we are for Minuteman. Holy cow, they designed this in the 60s and 70s, and it still works today. It's getting harder, but it still works. I hope in 2060 they're saying the same thing, that the Airmen in 2025 did a great job fielding Sentinel. It took a while. It's never as fast as we wanted, but it works. It works, and it works. It works well, and it provides our nation the critical deterrent that that we talk about it being foundational to. And so, the life of this program, it works each and every day.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, so your final wish.
Yeah. You know, life's never given. And so you said I couldn't ask for health. The opportunity to continue to serve, I'll be a little selfish. I enjoy each day being able to put on this uniform. It means a great deal. Having done this for now 30 years, every day is a privilege. There's no given. And so the opportunity to continue to serve is my last wish, right? And that I get to do that for a period of time. And I'll leave it there. That's the ultimate privilege.
Yeah, I mean, to be doing this at a time when, you know, we're building what is probably, you know, fielding one of the most difficult programs in terms of just the size and scope and character of it, and to get to be a part of that and play a role in leading it and shaping it is certainly, you know, a fantastic thing to be able to be a part of. So,
yes, sir.
Okay.
It's an absolute privilege to get to do this.
All right, now to wrap up the show, what's that elevator speech, that thing you want the listeners to know and to keep in mind, let's say 6 months from now, a year from now, as they think back, I remember that podcast with Adam and General Connor, and here's what he said. What's that thing you want them to remember 6 months or a year from now?
We are actively working as fast as we can to get the Sentinel system fielded. We are working with great partners and have great relationships to do this, but it takes everybody. It takes a lot of disciplines within the Air Force. It takes the whole team. On the missile side, it's the operators, the maintainers, the defenders, all play a critical role to this, and we want all the inputs that we can get so that we field the best system we can.
All right. With that, we'll make that the final word. General Connor, thanks for joining us on this episode of NucleCast.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the time. Appreciate the discussion.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you next time. Good discussion with a fellow Houstonian. We were, you know, talking before, and he saw my Roy Oswalt jersey in the back and wanted to talk baseball. So I didn't even know Colin was a Houstonian. But yes, but good discussion. Hopefully that sort of filled in some areas of, you know, doubt or uncertainty that you may have had as far as like where we are and what's going on. And so, and kind of what are we focusing on? So great discussion. Hopefully you enjoyed it.
This has been a production of the Anwa Deterrent Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunthal. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NuclearCast.